When he starts out in verse 4, there's this word, consider your ways, that he says. Verse 5, I guess it is. He is talking about, says, the word of the Lord came to by Haggai the prophet, saying, is it time for you yourselves to dwell in your paneled houses while this house lies desolate? Now therefore, says the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. And then verse 7, he says, consider your ways, go up to the mountains, bring wood, and rebuild the temple, that I may be pleased with it and be glorified, says the Lord. Just kind of one of my thought on this is the idea we need to consider what we are doing and with our resources in particular. He talks there in verse 4 about their paneled houses, and I would look at that, I would say, think about this. Where did those paneled houses come from? They're in Palestine, and wood is not all that plentiful. But if you remember the history of Ezra, Nehemiah, the king had sent an edict that said they could cut down the forests and build the temple when they first came. And then the temple got delayed. And so I'm going to surmise, just a minute, it's my surmising, but I'm going to surmise that they said, well, we don't want this wood to go to waste. And so they put it in their houses. So they have beautiful houses now, but the temple is not built. So I think we need to think about that. And I'm going to challenge you with some of this work that's in Zambia and kind of spread it out over the world too, but principally talking of Zambia, of the work that is available just in this small part of the world. And I, as he mentioned, I have a lot of pictures, and they're going to go through fairly fast because we've got to be out of here in time for the thing to start. So the first question is probably, where is Zambia? Zambia is down in the lower end of Africa, actually. It's landlocked, which of course affects people differently when they're landlocked. That big red line is the equator, so they're below the equator. And as we go there, that means, since I just got back here a little over a week ago, they're in wintertime. But wintertime there is the dry season, and wintertime is also, it gets into the 50s at night, and it gets into the 80s in the daytime, thank you. Beautiful weather to work in. Never rains, just, you know, it's kind of like you wanted a jacket in the morning, and then you would go out and take it off after about an hour, and you're out there in the sun working. So it was a great place to work, and so that was the type of weather. As far as Zambia, to me it has kind of this weird shape because Republic of Congo has this little finger sticking down in it, but it is all of this thing. And we are going in where the big arrow is, which is at Chivuma. It's in the northwest province, and it is tucked up there against the border. We're very close to Angola. The other two arrows, Zambezi and Chitakaloki, we all were into both of those. We flew into Zambezi and drove to Chivuma. When we left, we went down to Chitakaloki. Chitakaloki has a very large hospital. It's the one that you hear about more often. It has more people, has larger facilities. We are out in the boonies. And when we landed, we flew from Chicago to Addis Ababa. And from there, we flew down to the capital of Zimbabwe and up to Lusaka, which is down here in the kind of the lower right part of Zambia. And then we stayed overnight for them to fly a plane from Chitakaloki to Lusaka to pick us up, a little small one-engine job, crammed four of us in there, and I mean, us long-legged men, there's no room to move, your knees. I mean, it was tight. But we flew for 3 hours to get out to Zambezi, and then drove for another, I think it's a good hour, up to Chivuma. So this is us on the Ethiopian Airlines, all lined up. I notice I do well at these face things, you know. I can tell I look strange because I'm trying to figure out the camera. But anyway, let me back up. So this is Luke Johnson. He is out of Wichita, Kansas, and a young man, 19 years old, a wrestler, And so we like to use him a lot just to do big things for us. This is Art Burnham. He's been on other trips with me. He's an electrician out of Pennsylvania. He's older than I am, so you know he's really getting old. All right, so this is what the airline looks like sitting out there in Addis Ababa when we land. And basically, you'd go out to the airplane to load up, and you do it like this. This is actually coming off, I believe, but they just roll a stairway up there. We don't have all these fancy things that go out to your plane. You get on there, and you go over. Sometimes you have a bus. Sometimes you just walk across the tarmac to get to the terminal. Interesting thing, you know, we always think about, oh, there's always a McDonald's in the terminal. Well, this is the only eating place that I saw, a little bit different than the normal arrangement. And these are a couple stewardesses, and over here on the left side is probably, I assume, is a more traditional dress for Ethiopians. It's white with this nice green, pretty sash. On that first trip, the only time I saw her was kind of like at this point, because she served the first class people and I was not in first class. So we have these plain green outfits, very nicely dressed ladies. They're all very helpful. I always say these airlines in from other countries work to have to get the customers to come back. So this is landing in Lusaka. And again, we did. We got off out here on the tarmac. We walked sideways over to where those trucks and so forth are, and then down to the terminal, carrying your carry-on baggage with you. And this is checking in. Actually, we were sitting here sorting out our money because we needed to change money. We showed up there later on in the afternoon, and we walked in and said, we'd like to change some money. And she kind of gulped and said, how much? And we settled on $3,000. Was all we could change that day. Because that was all the money that she had in the local currency. So this is driving down the street, and we took a taxi from there. We're going basically clear across town to get to the mission flying agency that we were going to stay overnight, had lodging and fly out of. Very poor picture, but it's the best I could do at the moment. You notice the lady actually has a basket on her head. This is quite common in Zambia. That's the way they carry things. She is going down. If you've been in other third world countries, they work between, you know, at a stoplight. They work up through the traffic. And she was selling oranges that day. That's what was on her head. So we arrived at the gate to the Mission Flying Zambia. And this is the guest house that we stayed in. Sometimes you wonder what kind of a house is it. Well, these are very nice houses. These are built by probably the British. You'll see the British influence shortly. You also are in malaria season, and so it is dry season. Not a lot of mosquitoes around, but for the all seasons, the mosquito nets are available. This is actually not where I stayed. The other two guys stayed in this room. No, that was my room, come to think of it. Those were my suitcases. This is a young couple that came out of Texas, spent 7 years down in near Houston, and I don't remember their names now. It's Mark and Joanne, and they are now working. He's a maintenance person for the airplanes, so that is his part in this. And then they're at the guest house. We had breakfast, and then we had some time to walk around because he was flying from Chittagong. Therefore, he wasn't going to get there till 11 o'clock in the morning. And you notice the British influence, all the way everything is landscaped and trimmed up properly. And of course, they have the laborers to do that. But I just look at it and say, that's the British influence in this place. So here is their office and the hangar there. And on the front side of the hangar, you get their emblem, Flying Mission of Zambia. And then if you walk inside, they keep actually three planes. There's one hiding behind these other two. This is what they have, what they own. And I believe Joel Spicinger is stationed here also. He is in the missionary handbook. And they have what I would call an extensive shop out back. This is just some of their parts. For an airplane, you have to have parts you ordered, and you have to keep track entirely of where they go and when they're used. because we're dealing with people's lives. There are some things that you can do without, and they have lays, they have all sorts of things that they can work on these airplanes with. And it got to be about 10 o'clock. This is, again, the British influence. It was time for tea. And so everybody comes in and they have tea together. And we had a good time getting to meet some of these. As you can see here on the left and right would be Luke and Art. The next couple on the left, I talked to her because she's a financial. I think the other guy's a manager. And then we got Mark, and then there was a man named Joel, and he, I think, was out of Pennsylvania, if I have it right. And Joel Spicinger had left, and so they needed some extra help, and he was in there just temporarily for that. And then we have Joanne and their baby. Alice White was flying in, so she came in on the airplane and had some luggage from some of the missionaries that were still out there that they were able to spare, bring back. And the airplane itself only holds 900 pounds, and so there were actually two ladies, I believe, came. When we're leaving, we're big, chunky, 200-pound guys plus. So that meant we had 300 pounds extra, and that was it. We had to limit ourselves as to what we could take. Flying on the airlines, we have a connection with travel agency that'll make a special deal, and we could have carried three 50-pound bags in, but we couldn't get them on the small airplane, so we didn't do that. So this is just, you know, standing in front of it, getting loaded up, and here's Luke and I. This is in the back seat, and it was tied to our luggages behind us. It's technically a six-seater. If you had six people, I don't think you had any luggage with you, basically. And this is a shot just as we were getting ready to take off. Just a quick shot of the countryside as you're going over it. It's dry. Again, I mentioned it's dry season. And it is dry, and it's going to be dry for another couple, 3 months. And this is just a shot as we were leaving Lusaka. Well, this is actually the air, strip. I couldn't think of everything but strip. The airstrip in Zambezi, just a dirt track, basically, there. And they have to keep it cleared. It has to be approved by the government. And they were disqualified a little while, so they get very picky on that. And we'll see that show up again. Turn around the other way. This is the airport. You fly in on your own recognizance, and there is a building there, and Henry was waiting for us with the car. And when you show up, hey, you get kids. All we did was land, and kids start drifting in. And so there's kids around there just almost instantly. Whoops, sorry, I went a little too fast there. Going through the countryside, I'm always trying to figure out, you know, how do the people live? And this is how people live. Typically, they're in a village. A village is basically a lot of relatives, and they're not terribly large, and you find them scattered down the road. Some of them a little further away, some of them hard to get pictures of, so we get one or two and threw it in. And as we entered Chivuma, he says, this is the outskirts. You can tell the outskirts because here is the gas station for the town. It's got a nice little town. We'll show you some more in a minute. This is the entryway to the road going to the mission compound. The mission compound is actually located up on top of that hill. That radio tower, I think it's radio tower, or not radio, it's cell phone tower, is sitting up there on their property that you see at the top. And this is as you enter the actual compound, and you find some of the different houses. Here is some of the buildings that they work with. This would be one of the workshops that they have. And a couple more houses. I believe this is Alice White's house at one time. It's kind of like they refer to them as, well, this is somebody's house, and this is somebody's house. And it's like they leave the place. I don't have a picture of it. We stayed where Bob Young and his wife used to live. He has since passed away, and his wife left. But, you know, they left with everything there. And it's kind of like, well, maybe they're coming back, or maybe she's coming back. So everything is in place, but we use it in between times. Well-built places, and then the water supply is up here on a hill. We'll mention that again significance of some of that. But they pump it up there, and that's the storage supplies of water for that whole compound. And actually, I think that red one kind of back there in the background is the one that the city has put up there to supply water for the city. This is the back side of the chapel, just to give you an idea of what it looks like. Our major project is going to be on the roof, and then just kind of continuing around the compound to see what it's like. This is housing for, I believe it's some of the families and perhaps some of the ladies waiting to give birth. It's a hospital. They do a lot of births, and so there's a lot of work that is available there from that aspect. It also is a nursing school that they've instituted. I don't know as I have all of the history down, but I believe the compound started out as a school and then shifted more to the hospital, and now it's into a nursing school. And if you know of anybody that needs some good practical nursing experience, I recommend this place. There actually, we'll meet them in a minute, just four foreigners there that work there as missionaries. But you get different things there, and there's people all over the place. You know, I don't know how many. My guess is they probably have 100 beds around there. In different wards, just trying to add up the different wards. They also do midwife work, and the government, by their incentive of paying for births, the other hospitals take the easy ones and send the difficult ones here. So if you have a midwife that you know that is looking particularly for a place to study or to get some experience, I should say, encourage them to go here. Number one, they get into a foreign field and see how it is different, and also they will get experience, because they tell me because of COVID they're down to 600 births a year. That's, you know, about two a day. They used to have twice that many. And so if you want experience, go there. You'll get it instantly. Here's the entrance. They do have the hospital per se gated off, fenced in, just to kind of keep people from doing everything in there. There's an outpatient across the road, which is just off the edge of the picture, and some of the other things. So this is another side of it. This is one of the corners, and I think they developed a gate for people to go in here, particularly to get their prescriptions filled there in the corner room. This is a shot inside of the wards. You got a ward down this side and a ward down that side, and you have, you know, off or a nurse's offices scattered between them, so they can look in on the wards. They'd be separated by, you know, men and women and something. And someplace in the end, there's the VIP ward, so that if the president of the country decides to come and visit or stay overnight or be treated, why, he gets a special room. It's reserved for VIPs. This is the record system. You know, we are used to computers, and you go from room to room, and the computer is in every room. Well, that's not the way it is here. You come in, and you pick up your little booklet, and you carry it with you to the different people that you're seeing. I was being treated one time. I was sitting there watching, you know, they'd come in, and the guy would weigh them, and he would check their temperature and write it all down and hand them the book, and then they go out the door to the next place, and that's how it operates. And somehow they have a filing system that can actually find these things. Could be improved. And this is actually an upgrade, because shelves are only about a year old. This is their pharmacy. And that's where they keep all the drugs. And one of the things you really could help is just go there and open boxes for them. I mean, I'm going to show you some other boxes too. It's just, you know, if you have one or two people doing this, there's just not enough time to do everything. And the other thing that I've mentioned is that, you know, the nurse that takes care of this really has to be on top of this and just kind of guess. And basically, they get their drugs shipped in about, yeah, a couple times a year. So that means you got to be planning 6 months ahead to figure out what's going to run out in the next 6 months. Try that one on. This is their kitchen. I don't have very many kitchen people in here, but this is what they would cook in. They supply meals for those that are the patients. And this is a couple pots that they cook food in. And basically their mainstay is Shiva, and they take corn and they grind it up. Corn is the mainstay in this country. They take corn, grind it up very fine, and then they get boiling water and they dribble it in, and it comes out as this sticky ball that they will eat. And it's last, they basically swallow it. They don't really chew it, and it just sits in their stomach and lasts all day long. And I don't know if you heard Pam talk about the rice. Well, these people think they haven't eaten unless they've had this every day. So this is basically the people we're working with. Over here on the left is Martha Logan. Her grandparents are probably the ones that started this place. She grew up there, although she spent some time in school and so forth in the United States. Luke Johnson, myself, this is Henry Dick. He is a Canadian. He has an interesting life, and he has moved around in various places. He's been here about 4 years. He was at Chitticoloke for a while before that, and I think they asked him to come down just because they need a maintenance person. He's taking care of roughly 32 buildings. The next one is Tomiko. She is from Japan, and she is one of the nurses. And the other nurse, I believe, was not feeling well that day. This is actually when we were leaving. She wasn't feeling well, but we'll see her show up here in a minute. And then this is the shot through the picture window in our living room where we were staying, and that's the Zambezi River. And so, you know, it's a nice place, beautiful place to be. And so this, I think, was our first meal. Tomiko here on the left, and Ayumi is on the right. Ayumi thinks that she was in school when my daughter Katie was at Emmaus. And anyway, they're both nurses. Ayumi does more of the administrative end. This is a shot from the far end of the chapel building, just so you can see the shape of the roof to know what we were doing. And here's a shot down the ridge before we tore everything apart. When you start taking it off, you discover that at the wall, the ants have come along and found some dirt, probably because it's adobe wall covered with stone. And so they find this, and they filled everything between wherever they were at up to the roof, which usually wasn't too far, but they had filled it. It was hard. And when you disturb them, they come out and they crawl on you and they bite. And so we were working with ants around there. This is getting it set up. The first day we landed there on we landed on a Thursday. Friday, we tore off one half of the sign. And our object was to build this wall halfway down the roof so that it would be a straight shot from one end to the other. And you'll see that develop as we go along. And we got to Saturday, we didn't have enough rafters to do, enough wood to do any more, and so then we took a trip. And this is typical. Once you got off out of the town at all, you're into just a sand track. There's a lot of sand right in that area, so it's a sand track. We were heading down, and I gotta take pictures of cows. Okay, so there's just cows along the way. This is actually the airstrip in Shavuma. Now, it's not in operation at this time. Half of the year, it is flooded. The other half of the year, now the government says, no, it's not quite up to stuff. You got to keep everything trimmed up. And so they would like to move that, but that has to do with trying to buy land. You got to get the chief's approval and the village approval and all of these, and they're kind of saying, well, this isn't important to us, and so let's have a high price for it. And the missionaries are saying, we can't afford that high price. So they would like to move it, but they're in the middle of negotiations. They've been going on for a couple of years at least. And then we were ending up down at a beach. I mean, this is, I think he says, a mile and a half long. It's very squishy sand to walk in. It squeaks when you walk in it. Just a bend in the river, and it just has a beautiful beach to go down to just to kind of see things there. Then we went back up river a little bit, basically, to a camp. And this is a shot from the camp. They here, and they go down to the river to get water. Martha was telling me, one of the camps that she helped lead, you know, there's crocodiles in that river. And so you don't go down there alone. She found a girl down there alone. She says 5 minutes later, after she got her back, she says, see that crocodile down there? He was watching you, waiting to get you. And but that's what they handle every day. And They live in a little more crowded conditions. They have 8 dorms, and they said, yeah, we'll get about 240 kids in here. Well, you divide that out, we put 30 kids in a room. This is the room. I looked in the door and took a picture. Then I stepped over here by this shelf and took the picture the other way. And I don't know how they put 30 kids in there if you stacked them side by side, but that's what they do. But the kids are just so happy to be away and to hear, so they can hear the gospel, but to be away from their families, to be in something different. And the counselors don't even live there. And I think this is a speaker's cabin here. So this is if you'd like to be a speaker. You get nice facilities here. You get a roof over your head and a nice bed to sleep in. But that's what they do. The counselors are separate from the kids. The kids are just kind of in there by themselves. So they probably stay up all night and do crazy things that kids do. And this is their chapel building. I suspect they throw boards across those. They weren't, you know, this was not camping season. They only run a season about a couple months long. And something else, if what they need is someone to come along and help them develop a camping ministry, really. In other words, they need ideas of what do you do with this nice facility to get kids, give them something to do besides just sit there and hear the word of God. In other words, what kind of games do you play? How can you look at God's creation? I mean, they just, it's not there, and they need someone to come along and just help out and teach. And so if you know of someone that wants to do something like that, there's one young fellow there that I kind of put my eye on and let him grow up some, you know, maybe bring him back here and let him see some camping work. But it's only like a couple months out of the year. It's not like we try to run, you know, all summer and half the winter and so forth. So even a director would not have a full-time job being in the camp. So they have to do something else. This is where they typically eat. They put the food out there in the middle, and they take their little dishes, and they pull up and dip out what they want. I'm not exactly sure how that works, having never seen it, but that's what they described as this is the place that they eat. Then getting back to the town, this is basically a place you go down to. Later on, we saw a barge that is there, and it goes across the river. This is Zambezi River. There is no way to get across the river except by boat. And here's the exit on the other side, if you want to call it that. And that's the way you get to the villages over on that side. Then we went downtown, and just kind of a typical downtown, a whole bunch of shops, and I find this is quite normal. Shops are small, and they just have different things in there, and everybody sells what they have at that particular place. Oh, you notice here too, there also is this good Christian influence. In fact, you look at the missionary handbook, they talk about it being a Christian nation. So you get things like God's blessings in their name of their business. Funny thing about this is a nice restaurant here, but the funny thing about it is that the Zambezis will not go basically on the second floor. Something, you know, there's all these little things as far as cultures that we do that we think nothing about. We think nothing about going onto a second story. For them, it's terrifying. And so nobody uses the second floor except people like us that would show up. And we didn't actually go down there and eat, but we could have. But we would have been upstairs all by ourselves because they're afraid of the second floor. And we had the same problem with the roof in that they're also, you know, as long as they can hang on to something, they're all right. But to stand up on a roof and do work with both hands is just beyond what they can do, because it's just, you know, there are things we learn that we are not aware of. Oh, a side story that isn't even in this. He said, you take a Zambian, they cannot draw a straight line. Now, you and I can draw a straight line. If we say, I want to go from here to there, I can put a straight line. You can draw a straight line because we know how to do that. Now, let me say I want a circle to go from this point to this point, and we can't do it. It'll look like an oval, you know. We're not trained. They are the opposite. Their lines, you know, it'll curve, it'll do anything for straight points. But you say, let's make a field out here, a kickball field that's, you know, 10 feet across, and they'll say, okay, and they'll just walk around and kick a circle. And it'll be a perfect circle, no oblong to it, because they know how to do that. So There's differences. It's neat. This is how they get their water up to those tanks. There's a pump here. You're seeing the pipe here. The thing about this river is that it changes depth by about somewhere between 7 and 10 meters. Okay, that's a lot. 10 meters, three times 7 is 21 feet. In other words, it will come, that river down is down, it's going down further, but it will come right up to this ledge that's right here at the bottom of the screen. And so they constantly, because you may have to repair that pump, you have to move it in and out all the time. And so that's some of the daily things. And while we were there, I think, this was not my picture, but I think that's probably a picture of it down here, as the cage is starting to come out of the water, because I heard him say they need to get it. And so you go down there with your pipe wrenches and you just add another length of pipe and push it out further into the thing. Never mind the crocodiles that might be going by. And then later on, when you start getting rain, you got to start pulling it back in. Otherwise, it's going to be buried under 10 feet of water and you can't get it out. So this is the roof, and just this was Sunday morning. We had one half of the roof off, which had used as many boards as we could, and we had knocked dirt down, and we had knocked ants down, and we had knocked all these things. And so we get in there, and nobody else had cleaned it up either. So whoever showed up early, you know, everybody started sweeping out the place. You know, it's you know, sometimes you get to the chapel and nobody cleaned the place. Well, it's whoever shows up first job, and that's what we did. Sunday evening, they have a time together as English speakers. They'll sing hymns for maybe a half hour, and then this particular time, we were listening to a recording that they picked off the internet, and that's just us sitting there listening to the teaching. Naomi had a birthday, and so they got out a cake, and we had a celebration of that at the same time. So this is probably a Monday morning, tore off the rest of the roof, starting getting things lined up, getting some of the rafters laid in place. So this is one of the fellows who worked with us. He's unusual. He can actually work on a roof with both hands. Okay. His name is Enoch, and it's only about the only shot of it, but he came and helped us all the time, and Henry was paying him to do that. He also has a business, a woodworking business, and so Henry was going to give him a sander in payment. So this was just a lunch. We've got Enoch over there on the left, and then Nathan was working with Art on electrical, and then Sambo was also on the roof. He was the one that would kind of hold us, because we're having to drill every hole that we put a nail in, so you had to hold the rafter in place, you know, and it's kind of like, okay, we didn't have enough belts. So it's kind of, okay, I want the hammer and a nail, you know. Okay, give me the drill now, and put the next one, now a hammer and nail. And so he was valuable just sitting there holding his thing in his lap, because we had two or three guys doing all this. So he's, okay, you need the drill, you need the drill. You need the hammer, you need the hammer. You know, just very valuable, just helping out. And you see the rafters are adding to it, growing, and then we're laying purlins along, and I think that was as far as we got until we got some more boards. One of the men in the chapel was supplying the boards, and he has other places to supply stuff to. And so every once in a while we would say, oops, we just ran out and we need to get some more. Starting to get some tin on, and getting more tin on. And we got down to about a Friday, I think it was, and it's kind of like, well, we think some boards are coming. So we kind of rested a little while. It's tiring work, so we just kind of sat there. And then after a while, we said, no, it just doesn't look like it's coming. And but then they did show up. Saturday morning, we got it on. So we now have half the building roofed after 2 days in the first week and a full week the other way. So it was Saturday afternoon, take a trip. This is leaving the camp. These are the termite hills. You do see them. And it's interesting. He says, the Lord makes all these things to work together. In other words, you find in places where they have adobe bricks, that's because they have a soil that is basically an adobe soil, a clay soil. You can't build an adobe house in Iowa because we have all this good dirt, okay? They don't have it, but they can build houses from it. Well, the termites come along and they sort this. In other words, you take an ordinary soil and it's got sticks in it, and it's got sand in it, and they sort it all out and bring and make their nests out of basically clay. And so people will come along and he will take that because it's now sorted and use that to make their houses out of. And it's kind of like, isn't that really neat the way the Lord provides that for people? He knew they were going to need that. And so, and we were in a different part. Eventually you'll see some pictures. And I said, wait a minute, there's no termites out here. And he says, yeah, well, there's no clay out here either. It was all different type of soil. This is a big mound over here on the left, a termite hill. And that's more the size that you really are going to dig into and build your house out of. Going down the road, you do get a lot of water there. In other words, it's dry season now, but eventually it's going to rain, and it just pours rain. I've forgotten what it is. They get like a couple meters of rain, and it just bursts on them. And so this is the way their cassava, manzanita, whatever you want to call it, and they put it in mounds, and their corn is planted the same way, so that the water will run off and not just drown the plant. And yet, it can kind of get away, and that's what they do. So you see all these little hills in where they're planting. So this is Angola, just beyond this bar here. We stopped at the place. You're looking into Angola, and basically it's a border crossing, and we talk about borders a lot nowadays. Nobody goes between Angola and Zambia unless you have special permission. This is the border post, the housing for the guys. Check in. Do your paperwork in case you were to go through. And they asked me to speak, and so I was able to take a picture of the meeting from the front. I like to do that. And, you know, they send greetings to you. We bring greetings to them. You know, places we've been, I say, we're bringing our greetings to you, brethren, and they like to send their greetings back to us. So feel that you've been greeted. And everybody there by government edict has to wear a mask. And if they don't do that and somebody catches them not doing it, they won't be able to meet at all. And so they're like some of the places in the States, but they do what they can so they can meet together. And then afterwards we were outside and I looked over and it's kind of, well, what's that group over there? That's our young people there. And I suspect a bunch of them are nursing students, but quite a large group to go with this. Saturday, my opinion is that I stretched a muscle too much in my hip, and so by Monday, I could hardly get out of a chair. And so it was kind of like, well, what are you going to do with me? Because I'm not going on the roof. And he says, well, you know, here's this kind of a warehouse place, and he says, we've got all these people give us wheelchairs and walkers. He says, they need to be checked. You know, do they work? Do whatever. And first one was a walker, you know, and I was taking hair. I don't know if you know, but walkers pick up hair in their bearings, you know, so I'm picking hair out of that and checking out wheelchairs. And so that's what I did for a couple days. But you notice the boxes sitting there, and I'm reading the labels on these things, you know, this is delivered to Shivuma, you know, or this has got some missionary's name on it that isn't around there at the moment or may not be coming back. And they need somebody just to unpack. And, you know, more boxes. And where I was working, here were some of them that I had fixed up. And so when I got done, the gals at the hospital had a half a dozen more wheelchairs that they could actually use. And here is a shot, and it's real hard to tell, but actually what this little thing is up here in the middle is a bat. When we opened up the first half, we didn't get a good picture because it surprised them so much. You know, they knew they had bats around there. You know, you're talking about bats in the belfry. Well, there's this wall and these bats were above that. And he ripped it off and, you know, took the tin off and bats start flying. There's probably 50, 60 bats came out of that place. And this is actually the second side there. Oh, we know they're going to be in there. So they took a few pictures, but it's very hard to tell what it is. But there were bats there. One fellow went to get some more lumber, and on the way back, a tire blew out and rolled the trailer. So, you know, now we have things to fix. So we got part of that done. The rest of it, they had to wait for metal to come in from Lusaka. And so now we're working on the other half of the building. This is actually the entryway to the building here on the doorway. and getting the rafters up, and I was able to help measure off some of the others. And I have this habit as an old man to take a nap at noon. Well, during the noon, these kids had come by, and Luke is up, of course. He's young and ambitious and going. These are two kids, they're a couple houses down. This is they got this snake, and they had beat it to death and brought it to us. It's a cobra. At least it wasn't a black mamba. And it's about 6 foot long. So anyway, so back to the work. This is getting things set up. We're ready to let, the rafters are up, we're gonna lay the crossboards on there. Somebody snapped a picture of me walking away. Next to those wheelchairs, there was also a cane. And I thought, you know, that's good. It helped me for a couple of days. So I wandered over one day just to see what they were doing, you know, and I'm off isolated by myself. That's no fun. So here's bringing it in. These sheets of metal are going from eave, from the peak to the eave, about 22 foot long, I think it is, and kind of brought in a trailer. And oh, we skipped it. This Friday night, they had the young people. Some of the young people in the area would come over here just to play games. And we played two or three games, and then we split up and played some more games. And this is getting the roofing on. What we would do is we would, there was a fellow on top of the Kubota. He would get it up to the eave, and the guys up there would catch it and would shove it on up. And then we needed a little more ridge cap, so we went down to the local hardware store. This is a shot of one side of the hardware store. This is typical hardware store that you go into. And this is kind of the last nail is in place, I believe. And so this is the whole building put together with the bright, shiny roof on it, and that was great. And then the guys are coming along. They were hiring some people to come in and put blocks up to the roof we had built so that it would be tight. It would make the place warmer to do that, although there's open windows in this thing. And then just a quick shot, some ladies were walking by, and I thought, oh, let's take a picture of them. So ladies are just, they're walking across, you know, from the hospital, probably to leave the area, something like that. Now, we haven't talked about Art, because he had plenty of stuff to do. Sometime earlier, there's a different mindset. This is a sterilizer, and one day the thing got on fire. Well, instead of going over and just unplugging it, which is what an American would think about doing, it's kind of like, oh, there's a fire, let's all get out of the building. And so they let it burn up. Wonder it didn't burn the whole building down, but sufficiently it stayed with that. Well, now you got electrical problems, things need to be fixed. And so Art was asked to look at it, and they need to order some parts to accomplish that. Art was working with, the guy on the right is named Nathan. Young man, one of the elder's sons, up and coming. He had spent a lot of his schooling at the Sakeji School, so he knows English quite well, and they haven't had school for the last year, so it's kind of like, okay, to get in anywhere, you're going to have to do well in school, and we'll see what it does to him. We'll probably see the same thing in our own children in this country. And the other fellow also worked with Art, and I don't think I have his name down. He came along. The two of them would work with Art on the electrical because they have some interest in that, and of course Art needed some help. So that's just a shot of what somebody was doing. He's putting in some switches and stuff. Some of it was there, but it was a matter of getting it connected and making it work. And there's kind of a back room on the building that they use more in the hot season, and so they put a couple lights up there, and this is Nathan up getting that lined up. And we also put some on the outside, so we went over at night to check it out. So this was the lights that would shine down, make it a little safer, give people, and then just a shot inside at night also. Art got all the lights in the place working. They were not working when we came. And this is a fun one for the electrical people, is that at kind of the first pew, there was a outlet box, and so this is the way you get the wire there. It's also got a speaker wire in it, I think. And eventually, they just filled it in with cement. No conduit, just wander your wires. And then we were kind of asked, but we were invited out for a typical meal, and this is this Shima that I was talking about. You see in that pot, this little round thing, it comes about this big, and You're supposed to pick it off with your fingers and kind of smash it, and if you do it right, it doesn't stick to your fingers. And then typically they will just swallow it because it doesn't have any taste to it. But we would mix it. We had some fish, we had some beef. I suspected this was way more than normal, but beef and that, and chicken, and you'd kind of dip it in some of the broth, and we would eat it, chew on it. You know, we're Americans, we don't know how to do it right. And then this was after the meeting last Sunday. They were meeting and determining amongst the men of how they were going to reach out to some of the villages. And so, you know, they're forward looking. And then I asked the elders to, if I could get a shot of them together. These are the elders of the chapel. And typically there's only about three there because one of them is usually preaching Sunday morning. There's a village up the road that's pretty weak, needs some teaching. There are other villages that just need the gospel. And so they're often, one of them is gone. And so then we were done with the roof, and so now we kind of relaxed a little bit. We were going to go out, I think that's a Sunday afternoon, and you're likely to run across this. Here's a bunch of cows in the road. There's actually a young boy is herding them. He's over here behind the bush at the moment. And so we were going out to see this other fellow that is a missionary. He's out of South Africa, and he has decided to move up here. He has a very interesting lifestyle. But he is right on the Zambezi River again. And he had a boat, and so the object was to go down with the boat. Now, here's the river. We're kind of low tide. This river, you can't even see the wall up here, but it was within a foot of the top of the wall. So this whole thing is covered with water. Everything we're walking down is covered with water in the flooding season. So here we are out in a boat, a bunch of us going together. Henry was the one running it. And the first thing is, Chavuma actually has a falls. So we went up to see the falls from the boat point of view. Then we went down the river, and this is actually a view from the river of the camp that we visited earlier. And just kind of one of those things, here's all these trees. Now again, the line of the river is up there at the top, kind of where it's grayed up there. That's how far up that river will go. And so these trees go under. And it's just a good reminder to get your roots set deep that you can stay there when the floods go through. Set it on the Lord Jesus Christ. Sunday night, had a few of the others join us. There had been some COVID floating around and some other just sickness, and so we hadn't had too much on the other Sunday nights. Here's the trailer getting partway fixed. After we got a few more things on, they had to wait for metal to come in from Lusaka. You know, this 3-hour flight, 11-hour drive. One of the guys was going to go up there, I think next week, and pick up the metal and repair that. We also were invited down at night to just the men to have a barbecue, and that's about all we had was barbecue. We just had meat. Skipped the vegetables, skipped the... Sat there, watched the sun go down, just had a good time of conversation, understanding a little more of what this guy does and some of his background. And then the next day, he wanted us to go out and to see the place of the work. And so this is just driving across the plains here. And this plain, we're going for, I think he said 50 kilometers. So you're talking 30, 40 miles. And women from where we ended up are going to walk carrying grain, carrying corn on their heads, sometimes through the water, to get out to the road, to get down to Chavuma to grind it. And then walk back. That's what they do. And this whole thing just gets covered. And he says the strangest thing is kind of a little berm here. When this gets covered, there's fish everywhere. He says, I don't know where they come from, but there's fish, and they come along and they net them, and then they dry them and they sell them at the appropriate time in the market too. He still hadn't figured out for sure where they come. Here again, it's just kind of a shot of one of the villages that we were going by. Then you get down to, well, how are we going to get across this? We're trying to get to this guy's place, and apparently we missed a better driveway. And Henry was just nervous because he had been out with this guy before and gotten stuck, you know. And he just didn't want to get stuck again, you know. And so we kind of looked at it, and, you know, this is where we use the young men, you know. Tell you what, I think we'll pick over here. It's a little, not very deep right there. You pick up the log and move it, would you? So that's what they did. And so we're visiting his place. This John Leach is his name. And he was cruising down the river, sees this guy at a very neat place, which is unusual. And he says, this guy's got some initiative. So he stops in and talks to him. And so he has paid this guy to put up this pavilion. His vision is to put, cement some of this, put a little place for a nurse to come and to stay and to run a clinic. He says, it'll take all the pressure off of Chivuma because they're all walking there now, and they could do it out here at a clinic and just come in there once a month, do a clinic, take care of the pregnant people that you want to check their blood pressure once a month, something like that. And he said, fill in cement, and this is where you would cook, all sorts of good things. He says, after paying this guy, he put a door in his house. He says, that's what happens. When people get some money, they will use it to improve their life. It used to be a curtain. And this is kind of his family, basically. And near as I could tell, these are all his kids. They're just standing around talking. And this is his path his wife takes every day down to the river to get water. And he hopes to put a pump in there for them someday. And then we are in the process of leaving. This is our last time. So we're traveling down the road. We stopped in to, and this is a famous bridge. It's a swinging bridge. You'll see that in a moment. Chiingi Mission is actually a Catholic mission that is across the river, and they have put in a bridge. So this is what the road you're taking to get down to it. Said 8 kilometers, so you're dealing with 5 miles of this, driving, 15 miles an hour to get there. Shot of some more places. This is the bridge. Goes clear across the Zambezi River. And it's kind of holy in between. If you don't mind walking in half air, you're fine. It's steel, so it's... But I know that would bother some people. We did stop at... I think it was in we stopped at a store to buy some things. If you're going to town, you get a list from everybody in the compound that says, this is what I need. And so we needed some chips, I think she wanted. And so they throw a box down off over the top and say, here's your chips. And this is a road into Chitakaloki. And we were driving for like 15, 20 miles on this type of road. And we're going along and suddenly, what's that noise? That sounds like air coming out of a tire. Sure enough, we got a flat tire. This is a spare, it's almost flat. So we drove very slow for another 15 miles. Took us over an hour to get, an hour beyond what we wanted to do to get there. Cattle again, ox cart. And as we get near the Chitakaloki Hospital, apparently a soccer game just finished. So, everybody's walking. Everybody walks, okay? We don't drive, you walk. You don't have anything else you can't own. You can't afford anything else. So here's Chitakaloki. And this is, I believe, the hospital they actually use. This is the original part that is now more of administrative buildings. And this is the guest house that we stayed in. And we jumped on the airplane. Again, packed ourselves in. Luggage was lighter this time, but still, it was quite crowded, no seats. And we rearranged ourselves and packed ourselves in. And so this is the Chitakaloki airstrip. I don't know why I can't remember that. And this is the shot through the propeller of Lusaka. We actually landed at the international airport because it was closer for us and the other things we were doing. So that's it. We got 5 minutes. Nobody else is here. You got any questions that I can answer? I realized there was a lot of things we didn't.
So English, primary language.
Yeah. Probably considered secondary language for the people, because they have their tribal languages. But yes, it's English. So you go there, you can converse with anybody. As I understand, everybody is supposed to be proficient by grade 7 in English. So yeah, you can go there and expect to communicate.
Fred, do you feel safe traveling around?
Yes, you feel safe. That's often a question we get. I've gone in a lot of countries. You say Colombian people say, how do you go to Colombia? Well, you go with a missionary. The missionaries know the area.
Right.
And they know where to go. They know where not to go. You need to just kind of pay attention to what they say. There it's very safe. It's kind of like you're out in the bush. Nobody is, you know, they're having a presidential election here, what, next week, I think it is. And so if you're going to be in Lusaka, expect riots. They said, embassy says, don't think of coming right now. Don't fly in now. It's kind of like, it was a good time for us to leave because of that. And so,
how long were you there?
We were there about 3 weeks. It took us about 4 to get in and out. That's one of the things, particularly Africa and out in the bush. In other words, we left Chicago on a Tuesday morning. I left home, all of us left home Monday to get to Chicago because we had a need to be at the airport at 7. Tuesday morning, we flew to Addis Ababa, we flew into the other town and into Lusaka. It was, let's see, 14 hours to Addis Ababa and another 6 hours, besides another hour or two layover, to get to Lusaka. We stayed overnight, flew 3 more hours out, and we've killed 3 days. And then coming back, you do the same thing. We left Wednesday. We had to get into Lusaka to get our COVID test, stayed overnight, and flew out Friday morning, landed in Chicago on Saturday morning. And so, you know, it's kind of like you lose most of a week going in and going out. So you have to take that into account. If I go to South America, you know, it's a 5-hour trip from Miami and no problem. So anyway, and, you know, one more thing on Haggai. I open with Haggai saying, consider your ways. Think about what you're doing with what you have because of all their houses. He gets to the end of that book, which is only 2 chapters long. I encourage you to read it. But he gets down to the end, verse 18. And he says, consider from this day onward. In other words, make a decision that you want to do something for the Lord. And he says, now watch. From this day forward, he says, now your barns are going to be full. Consider your ways. And I want to encourage you to do that. Consider how you serve the Lord. Don't just keep going on doing what you've been doing. Consider what the Lord would have you to do, how to serve him. And obviously, I think this is a great place to do it. You get experience. And I enjoy being able to go and come back, but it changes my perspective. It will change your perspective if you go overseas. So I encourage you to do that.
Well, Fred, who puts on then, when they have Bible camps there, who puts
those on? It's the local people. You know, one of the elders has a heart for it will go out there and do some of it, but they could use some training and stuff. Oh, incidentally, there's a thing over here, and there is a page there you can sign up if you would like to hear about when we're going, about what's going on. Sign up. Give me an email if you can. Otherwise, postal address will work. And look at stuff, take information, whatever. You can look at pictures of other places we've been. All right. Everybody is collecting. David has shown up. We're going to close this up. Yeah.